So I imagine that our scripture reading for this morning is familiar to most of us. It's an excerpt from the Sermon on the Plain, which, as you may remember from Danny's introductory sermon a couple weeks ago, is Luke's shortened version of the Sermon on the Mount that we know from Matthew. So in Luke's version, Jesus has gathered together his disciples and a large crowd of people, people from many different regions, from Judea, Jerusalem, from the coast, and he's encouraging them, he's healing them, and he's teaching them. So I'm sure that this big crowd of people represented many different perspectives and many different stories. Probably had rich people, poor people, sick people, healthy, the young, the old, different ethnic groups, different voices, different opinions, different. The writer of Luke is giving us a clue right away from the beginning of chapter 6. This group is a diverse group of people. So I don't think it would be too much of a stretch for us to place ourselves in this story and feel like we can identify with that kind of diversity, and also maybe some of the problems that accompany that kind of diversity. So if you'll imagine with me for a moment, Jesus is addressing maybe a large crowd of people from Washington. So maybe you have a high-profile business executive from Bellevue. Maybe you have a farmer from Walla Walla, a homeless person from Ballard, a drag queen from Capitol Hill, a high school teacher from Rainier Valley. These examples might help us think about the crowd that day. Of course, we all know that gathering together any group of people, whether it be 20 people or 5,000 people, whether it be from the first century, whether it be from 2016, probably be difficult to find a consensus on just about anything. So with that in mind, think about the people that came to hear Jesus that day. The kinds of disagreements, maybe, the diversity of perspectives, experiences, stories. Maybe the kind of questions, like these. How exactly do we treat poor people? What about the outcasts? What about the sick? What about the lame, the lepers? What about the wealthy? What about the people with power, abusing their power? Basically, how do we get along? When we begin to examine these questions, I'm struck that we're still asking the same things today, aren't we? Despite all the differences between that world and ours. So I think it's of great interest to us that Jesus doesn't begin by offering instruction or immediately setting out a list of do's and don'ts. It says in the beginning of chapter 6 that he came down to them, that he stood on a level place with them. He listened. He recognized the needs of the crowd. He had compassion and he healed them. This is the character of Jesus' ministry that day. I think it's really important to understand that when we start to deal with this particular passage about judging. So perhaps you, like me, have heard this passage on judging others many times. Phrases like, don't let the blind lead the blind, or a disciple is not above the teacher, or the good fruit versus the bad fruit. And these things might work for us as maxims or catchphrases for discipleship, or accountability, or leadership, but I think when we take them together, this passage presents us with more challenge than we might be comfortable with. Personally, I am most struck by Jesus worrying about what obstructs our vision, the famous, why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? It seems to me that Jesus is playing with a little bit of sarcasm here. He's playing with some exaggeration, maybe some irony. He's asking, why are you hyper-focused on that small little speck in someone else's eye, someone else's business, that you've decided to single out a speck that's tiny in comparison to the huge obstruction in your own? And we kind of chuckle, the idea of a log sticking out of somebody's eye is sort of a humorous metaphor. Maybe we read this a little self-assured. Of course we want to remove those logs from our eyes. Of course, we want to be aware of our pride and our judgments that we level against other people. For I think we pride ourselves sometimes as Christians that finally we figured out how to deal with that log in our eye and regain our vision. So So I think we can agree, at least I hope, that becoming more and more aware of our prejudices and blind spots is really important work. In fact, that work doesn't end, and I don't think it should. Yet often, the way we are inclined to read this passage, and I would argue misinterpret it, comes next. It says, "You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye." The way I've heard this passage used seems a little more concerned with removing the log from my eye so that then I am better equipped to remove the speck from someone else's. Maybe we think the passage moves like this in a linear way. We think, okay, first step, recognize your bias. Second step, remove it. Third step, take care of somebody else's. However, I think that when we reduce Jesus' words to a step-by-step list like that, we're in danger of missing what Jesus is truly, deeply saying. For when we become fixated on making moral prescriptions for other people, this is the passage that should cause a red flag to go up for us. Jesus isn't saying, the end goal is removing the speck from someone else's eye, so let's take the log out of our own first. Jesus is not advocating self-righteousness dressed up like humility. That would contradict his message, and he's quite critical of the Pharisees for doing that very thing. Instead, I believe that he's saying, lay down your private, individual piety that blinds you so that you have more space, so that you have more room to see others. Jesus' message in the Sermon on the Plain is directing us towards empathy and away from inward-focused moralizing. Remember how he began his interaction with the crowd. Gathers everybody at the same level. He heard them. He healed them. Then he teaches new ways of living and of being. He is reminding the crowd and us that a life of faith is not a how-to guide to correct other people, but instead, it's an outward-focused ethic. An absurd generosity, as Danny called it, that helps us regain our vision so that we can see others clearly and kindly. So, okay, there's that. But how do we do it? I think the clue lies in learning how to listen to other people's stories with curiosity and with wonder. Regaining our vision, pulling the logs from our eyes, means regaining the ability to listen to each other's stories. I don't know about you. My default mode, my inclination when I encounter someone else's life, someone else's story that doesn't make sense to me, maybe it offends my sensibilities, is to impose my own story on theirs. I try to fix, I try to sterilize, sanitize someone else's story when it contradicts my own or when I don't understand it. This is not unlike the impulse that we all have to take the speck out of our neighbor's eye. It even happens when we're well-intentioned. We assume that the way our story, our life works, is the way it needs to work for somebody else. We map on our own stories over somebody else's, often in an attempt to identify or understand, but what we end up doing may feel more like invading someone's story rather than empathizing with it. So I recently listened to NPR's On Being podcast radio program segment entitled Listening as an Act of Love. And I think that's some really helpful articulations of what it means to listen with empathy. In it, Krista Tippett suggests that listening to each other's stories is a spiritual tradition. It's a sacred act that listening attentively to one another's stories is a way of insisting that life matters, that every life matters. Listening deeply to each other's stories, treating each opportunity to do so as an opportunity to learn, an opportunity to be a student of another's stories and experience, I'd like to suggest to you today that is how we begin to remove that log from our eye. It's a way for us to move away from the inclination to judge others harshly and quickly, and alerts us to the log in our own eye. In the act of moving closer to listen, we may realize that speck in our neighbor's eye is not quite as important as we thought. When I move close enough to listen, I can no longer impose my story on someone else, as beautiful as it may be, as if my story is the primary way of understanding the world, or faith, or even Jesus. I stumbled across a great quote from Thomas Merton last night, actually. And so when I read this, I want you to replace the word love with listening. Because I think that for our purposes today, loving and listening are the same thing. He says, "Our job is to love, or to listen, to others without stopping to inquire whether or not they're worthy. That is none of our business. And in fact, it's nobody's business. What we are asked to do is to love. And this love itself will render both ourselves and our neighbors worthy, if anything can. I believe that it's in this way that listening becomes an act of love. And we must learn to regain our ability to listen if we want to understand Jesus' message from this passage today. Indeed, unblocking our vision might mean that we all need to flush out our eyes with a little bit of clear water, move a little closer to one another, and see what happens when we invest ourselves in the act of listening.